schools, etc. Just started playing. I started MMA basically when the inception of MMA started. Big fan, got me really, really into MMA. I wasn't even that big of a fan before. I was fortunate enough to qualify for the New York live final. I know, Brett, you were trying to get there. So.
I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't do it. I really wanted to. So you saw 205 live, right? McGregor.
Yeah. McGregor. Yep. McGregor Alvarez was awesome. We had a lot of guys in the community that was trying to get there too. A lot of guys that you and I know that made it as well. So, yeah.
Well, awesome. Obviously look forward to breaking down the card with you. And before we get into the card, just a couple things I want to talk about. You know, someone has asked me to bring up this bill, this House bill that's in Texas right now. It's the House Bill 1457. The bill supports the fact that daily fantasy sports is a game of skill. And they ask that those of you in Texas, please call your congressmen, state representatives, and ask them to support this bill. You know, if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports, I really hope that you go out and do this. And, you know, getting into this week, it was a fun week last week. Now we got kind of a meh card. It's UFC Nashville. Of course, there's a couple week break after this before we head into arguably the best card of the year in UFC 211. UFC Nashville headlined by Artem Lobov and Cub Swanson. It's kind of an odd main event. So I don't know, Mike, do you have any thoughts on this card as a whole?
Yeah, it seems like they've been doing it lately. If they know that they've got a pay-per-view coming, they're just loading the pay-per-views up and they're kind of slowly putting together these oddball cards. And let's not overshadow how big of a week you had last week.
Yeah, I took down a couple tournaments. It was, you know, it's always nice to win one. We put in the hard work. There's a lot of people that we both know who did well too. There's a lot of guys in the premium chat who won big as well. And I guess that's a good segue. We'll break down all these fights as best we can in the time that we have. But if you want full written breakdowns, access to my projections, access to expert rankings, access to the premium chat, and there's so much more in there. I really recommend checking out the MMA premium section in the daily marketplace on RotoGrinders. It's only $5.99 a week, and I really think it you know, will hopefully help you make a better help you become a better player. And there's always tons of guys in the premium chat on Saturday. I know Mike's in there a lot, just hanging out watching the fight. So I definitely recommend checking that out. On DraftKings this week, we got a $27.50 takedown. There's 2,100 entries in that. There's also a 3-entry max punch, $20 to enter, $15K total prize pool. Let's try to get that filled. And as I mentioned, it's not the best card of the year. The prize pools aren't big, but I can promise you that DraftKings will have some big prize pools for UFC 211 in a few weeks. So there's still a lot of money to be won. And with that, let's start breaking down the card. The first fight of the night is Hector Sandoval versus Matt Schnell. Sandoval comes in as the slight favorite, minus 120. Schnell is the underdog, plus 100. On DraftKings, Sandoval is 8.2K and Schnell is 8K. It's a close fight, in my opinion. Mike, how interested are you in this one?
Pretty interested. It's any flyweight bouts, you'll see me trying to get some action in on it. Right away when I saw the fight, I'm thinking Hector Sandoval, just on my initial thought. I know that he has a win over Freddy Serrano in his last. We don't know really if it's, you know, kind of a passing of the torch fight. Matt Schnell took on Rob Font. He went up a weight division, so it's not his natural weight class, and he got steamrolled in that fight, so that was pretty expected.
I like Sandoval in this one. You know, he beat Freddy Serrano, and Serrano's a former Olympic wrestler. I didn't expect Sandoval to land takedowns in that fight. He was able to, so you know, that impressed me, and I think that's the you know, a good route to victory for him here. Schnell is pretty much a submission grappler. The problem I have with Schnell is that he tends to fight off his back to get submissions, which is all fine and good on the regional circuit, but you have to have wrestling to back that up. In the UFC, you can't just be a bottom grappler, and I've yet to see him control guys on top, land takedowns. I don't think he's going to be able to get Hector Sandoval down. So with that said, I think Sandoval has the wrestling advantage. And obviously, you know, coming off a win, I feel like he should be the favorite in this fight. I like him a good bit just based on the grappling potential. If, you know, if he lands three takedowns, a handful of passes, even in a decision, he's not too expensive. He could score 80, 90 points. Do you have any interest in Schnell as the underdog? Like he seems like a kind of a boomer bust guy.
Yeah, I do for sure. And the reason being is he's going to be holding a 6-inch reach advantage. I'm wondering if he can be able to keep him at bay. If he's able to work off his striking to keep him at bay, prevent the takedowns. I do think he can rack up some significant strikes, but it does look like the play here is Hector Sandoval on paper.
Yeah. And Schnell seems like an active striker too. That is one thing I noted, not very dangerous. You know, so for me, I'm considering Schnell a little bit a low exposure play only because, you know, the odds have this as essentially a pick 'em. So he's one of the best fighters below 8.1K that has, in terms of win percentage. I don't see him winning by submission, though. It's not super likely. The odds to win inside the distance for Schnell are plus 400 and without takedowns, I think his upside's kind of low. So my preferred play is Sandoval, but I do think it's a fight that you should have some exposure to, at least in tournaments.
Yeah, for sure. You want both sides of this one. But probably wouldn't touch it in cash, though.
Yeah, I would maybe Sandoval, but it's not a fight. You know, it's a fight that you can end your lineups with. Certainly, I wouldn't start your lineup with either of these guys. Well, I think we broke that down as well as we could. Let's move on to the second fight. We have Brian Barberena taking on Joe Proctor. We haven't seen Joe Proctor in the octagon in a while. Barberena comes in as a pretty heavy favorite, minus 330. Proctor, the underdog, at plus 270. Barberena is also priced very highly on DraftKings, 9.1K. Proctor is 7.1K. Proctor's going to be, you know, I don't know, I'm sure you're going to mention this, but Proctor's going to be cornered by Joe Lozon, who fights later in this card. You know, they're Boston guys. You're a Boston guy. Are you on Team Proctor here?
Yeah, and it's not just for the Boston. Sorry, Brett. It's right. I do like Lozon as a punt play. I think he's going to be able to tough this one out. I know the
bottom. Lozon or Proctor?
I'm
or
sorry. Both? Probably both, but Proctor. I know he got a really tough fight last time against Magomed Musaev, and he is the top of the top in striking. So I do like Proctor to avoid takedowns. I know last time out, Barberena was taken down 12 times, but that was by, was it by Brett?
Colby Covington.
So that's
elite wrestler.
Elite grappler. You're not going to get that out of Joe, I don't think. Joe's just going to try to stand and bang. But I do like to see that, you know, he's got a good takedown defense. And, yeah, I think that he'll be able to rack up some significant strikes. And I just think for his price at, what is he, 7,100?
Yeah.
Last, I think I see it a three-round decision, and it's going to be close. I personally like the punt play on Proctor. I see like a 29-28, pretty close fight. But I think it's closer than what Vegas odds is saying, indicate. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the odds are a bit wide here. I mean, 330 for Barberena, like, sure, he's a great play as, like, a plus 400 underdog, which he's been, you know, multiple times. But I don't know if I really want to spend 9.1K for him. Like, I see this fight just playing out on the feet. Proctor hasn't landed a takedown in the UFC. He has good enough wrestling. And he's got a super strong guillotine. That's how he's won a lot of his fights. The thing with Barbarena is he just never quits. He's super tough, durable. He's going to be there in the last minute of the third round, no matter how tired you are. And I'm not sure if Proctor can hang with that. I've heard a lot of mixed reviews on how durable he is. Like, a lot of people say he's just not durable because he, you know, I don't know if it's because he got torn up by Mustafayev in his last fight, but that dude has...
He got beat to the body fast.
He was throwing some of the hardest hands I've ever seen. Like, and that's not an exaggeration. He was putting 100% into all his punches. Like, anyone would get finished by that. So, yeah, Proctor doesn't have... He's not as granite as someone like, you know, Barbarena. Barbarena's a really tough guy, but Barbarena's not dangerous. And really, it comes down to the price for me. There's so many other guys, I like at 9.1K, guys and girls. So
you're going to have lower ownership on Barbarena for sure.
See, I don't know. I think he's kind of a bigger name than, like, he's a bigger name than Holtzman. He's a bigger name than Alexis Davis, who's coming off a loss.
Is he just a bigger name because he beat Sage Northcutt?
As part of it, yeah. Honestly, as part of it, I think he'll be owned to an extent, just based from the public. And it maybe it's not a bad play. He lands at a really high rate. I don't think he's going to land many takedowns. I don't think he's super likely to finish. So I prefer Proctor if I price considered. I don't necessarily think Proctor's going to win, but he very well could. And for 7.1K, I would rather go that direction than Barbarena. But honestly, it's not a fight I'm going to have a ton of exposure to.
Yeah, for sure. I think we both agree it's probably going to go to the decision. I'm really not sure on the tempo of this fight. It's kind of a lot of question marks about it. And like you said earlier, Proctor has a question mark because of so much time off as well.
For sure. All right, well, let's move on to the next fight. We got Alexis Davis taking on Cindy Dandois. Davis comes in the favorite all the way up to minus 300 now. Dandois, the underdog, plus 250 on DraftKings. Davis costs 8.9K and Dandois, the underdog, 7.3K. I have a strong opinion on this fight. I don't know if you're as interested in it as I am. Let's hear it.
Yeah, for sure. I do like Alexis Davis. Fought Sarah McMahon in her last fight and gave McMahon a pretty darn good test. I know that we both heard in that fight, I can't feel my face. And that is really difficult to do to a very durable Sarah McMahon. Sarah McMahon was able to pull off the win in that one. I think that she just has the more crisp striking. I think she's a pretty darn good play on this card. Alexis Davis should be able to eat her up on the feet. Cindy really is stepping up in competition for this one.
Absolutely. There's several points I want to make with this fight. The first is, Dandois has zero striking game, like literally zero. She'll stand like this and kind of back up against the cage and just kind of wait for you to strike. And then if you get close enough, she'll try to clinch. Like, if this fight plays out on the feet for any length of time, I know Davis isn't an elite striker, but she lands 4.69 significant strikes per minute in the UFC. She has enough power. I would be shocked if Davis loses this fight while it's standing. Now, Dandois is known for her submission ability, but she hasn't beaten anyone recently with much talent. And second of all, she doesn't have like a wrestling control game. She will use the head and arm throw, use the scarf hold on the bottom, you know, holding the head and arm, trying to just punch you in the face. It's not a technique that works at a high level. And, you know, we just saw it with Michelle Waterson last week. You know, Paige VanZant all the time. If you use the head and arm throw in the UFC, any good fighter will take your back. And that's what she relies on most, throws like that. It's not wrestling. So, yes, she could go out there, rush Davis, throw her to the ground, get a submission in 30 seconds. But If she doesn't do that, I think she loses this fight and potentially gets finished. Davis is a really good grappler herself. You know, she was coming off maternity leave in her last fight against Sarah McMahon, and McMahon's in the, you know, an elite fighter in this division. Dandois is not.
She has beaten Megan Anderson, who is the champ right now.
She has, and I went back and watched that fight, and I don't think Megan Anderson's that great either, to be honest. Spoiler alert for when she comes into the UFC. I think she's overrated. You know, there's a chance that Dandois wins by submission. You know, Davis is kind of toward the end of her career, again, coming off maternity leave on her last fight. But I just think she's the better fighter everywhere. And I think she has a good chance of finishing Dandois in the second or third round. So, because she's not going to be that highly owned, a lot of people are going to be scared of her. She makes for a good tournament play, in my opinion.
I agree.
Her odds to win inside the distance are where is she at? Alexis Davis, inside the distance, plus 140. That's pretty good for Alexis Davis. Dandois, plus 425, which is not so great. So I'll definitely have exposure to Davis in this one. Maybe a dart on Dandois, just because she's cheap and can really only win by quick submission. Yeah, any other thoughts on this one?
Not much. I think it's pretty straightforward.
All right. On to the FS2 portion of the prelims. A fight I know we could spend hours on if we just had the time. Jessica Penne fighting Danielle Taylor. Penne comes in the favorite, minus 130. Taylor, the underdog, plus 110. She opened at plus 170, and she's up to 110, which I knew she would be bet up. Penne is 8.5K on DraftKings. Taylor is 7.7K. You know, I think it's a close fight, but the question is there enough upside to target in any format, regardless of who wins?
Yeah, I don't think that there's much merit in this fight. We were talking a little bit before the show that we just both think that this fight's going to be a pretty slow-paced fight. In this particular fight, I do like Jessica Penne. I know that she hasn't looked good. A lot of people around the industry are saying that her head game is just, she's all over the place. She's not really committed. I just don't think that Danielle Taylor is going to be able to compete on the feet with her. I think she's gonna Penne has a pretty good reach advantage, a 7-inch reach advantage. Anything for me over 5 is a pretty decent that they're going to be able to hold their own. Taylor's really, her path to victory is going to be trying to get in there and strike, but I just can't see it being at a high rate.
Yeah, Taylor is annoys me more than many fighters. Just going back to her UFC debut, first of all, she's too small to be in this division. She fought Marina Moroz, who was at a significant length advantage, like Penne is now. They're different fighters, but Taylor just circled on the outside for 15 minutes. They each landed 17 strikes in 15 minutes. That fight was one of the worst fights I've seen in my life. You know, Taylor is incapable of closing the distance, but at the same time, she's so athletic. She's a good wrestler, you know, decent enough technically that you know, she knows what she's doing in there, but she just can't close the distance. But she can keep her distance defensively. Her second fight, she didn't do much either, except for when she poked Siohi Ham in the eye and then beat her up for 30 seconds. That's her best offense in 30 minutes of UFC action. Also, Siohi Ham is, she's just as small as Taylor too, that, you know, there was no size disadvantage there. And I thought Taylor lost the fight, but now she's at a big reach advantage again. Can she win this fight? Yes, I think she can. The odds indicated it's a coin flip and I'm going to treat it like that. The concern I have is that, you know, Taylor's not, shouldn't be getting takedowns. Penne's the better grappler. Even if Taylor got the fight to the ground, I think Penne would be at the advantage. I think she would have a decent chance to win by submission. On the feet, yes, Penne got beat up by Jędrzejczyk and Andrade, two of the best in the world, but I don't think Taylor's going to be landing at volume. I'll have some exposure to Taylor just based on the price and the fact she can win, but I think her upside's like 70 points. So really, if any two other underdogs win, she's going to be out of the winning lineup. So in case that doesn't happen, I'll have some exposure to her because she can win. And I'll have some exposure, low exposure to Penne, just because there's a chance she could be really low owned and win by submission. But overall, it's just not a fight I'm looking to target.
Yeah, it's a total, almost avoid. Just GPPs might sprinkle a little bit on Penne for me.
Yeah, a nice sprinkle of this fight in tournaments. Other than that, it's a no-go. Let's move on to a fight where I think we both have quite a bit of interest. Scott Holtzman taking on Michael McBride. Holtzman comes in the favorite, minus 360. McBride, the underdog, plus 300. On DraftKings, Holtzman is quite expensive, which may work out in our favor. 9.3K. McBride is 6.9K. And for me, this one's more about how good I think McBride is than how great of a fighter Holtzman is. But who you on in this one?
I am all over Holtzman. We've seen some upside with him. I know that he has a loss in his last fight to Josh Emmett.
Yeah.
Who I mean, that was a pretty fun fight to watch. I just think it's all about the takedowns and the upside with Holtzman in this fight. I personally see this one going inside the distance and Holtzman being able to take him out on the ground, whether it be ground and pound or a quick submission of some sort, take the back. What do you think, Brett?
Yeah, I really like Holtzman too, and I'm hoping he's not going to be popular because he's in that Cub Swanson range, John Dodson, Ike Kinta. There's a lot of bigger names in him. I really like him. We've seen it time and again that grappling is the most important thing, more important than finishing. It's grappling, and people still don't treat it like that's the case. McBride was taken down 5 times in his UFC debut and pounded out in the second round by Nick Lentz. Holtzman isn't an elite fighter, but I think he holds a significant wrestling advantage. If he wants to get the fight down, I think he can. McBride's a decent submission grappler, but I don't think he's a real threat. And he's also doesn't look like a good striker to me. So is Holtzman the best fighter in the world? No, but he has potential in this matchup, potential to land a lot of takedowns. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm going to try and have as much exposure as I can to him. I tend to target the mid range in tournaments, which makes it difficult to go all the way up to 9.3 for Scott Holtzman. Yeah. But, I mean, he has legitimate 120-point upside, and based on the ownership, he's one of my favorite plays.
Yeah, same here. I'm going to say he's probably the safest right there. I'm going to have a lot of exposure as well.
Perfect. Well, I'm glad we are on the same page. Let's move on to another fight where I also have – quite a bit of interest. Dustin Ortiz taking on the ever popular Brandon Moreno. Ortiz, the favorite at minus 200. Brandon Moreno plus 170 is the underdog. Ortiz comes in at 8.6K. Moreno comes in at 7.6K. I think ownership might be split on this one. I don't have too strong of a take, but I think it's one we should be targeting in on DraftKings.
For sure, last week we saw the flyweights just own the scoring. That was an amazing display by
Elliot.
It was just – it shows you what this weight division can do. They have these scrambles that just literally last from one transition to the other. And last time out, Moreno fought Benoit. Benoit put him in some difficult spots. I actually was on Benoit that last fight for Moreno. Moreno's got a lot of hype behind him. He got the hype off of that Smolka fight. It's really interesting because I really want to take the underdog here. But at the same token, you have Dustin Ortiz who's going to be able to win these scrambles and be able to get back up. We've seen him again and again be able to get back up. So I do see merit on both sides. But at the end of the day, I do think that Ortiz has a better all-around game. What do you think, Brett? I know that you're probably wanting to take a little both sides, but
yeah, no, definitely. I agree with a lot of what you said, and I want exposure to both sides of this fight. Ortiz almost never dominates fighters, almost never. At the same time, he almost never gets dominated. His fights are always super close. I just think the winner of this one is going to have some success in grappling, and for the price, they're probably going to score high enough. So I think Ortiz has a wrestling advantage, so he's going to be my preferred play. I think he's more likely to land, you know, 5-6 takedowns. Maybe Moreno scrambles out of them, but he's got a little more upside, in my opinion. I think Moreno may be better on the feet. Ortiz, I don't really love Ortiz's striking game, and Moreno's good enough in the grappling department where if he won this fight, split decision, 29-28, whatever, I wouldn't be shocked. So one of my favorite fights as a whole to target, I think it'll be popular. You know, Moreno's, like I said, a big name, pretty cheap, but I definitely think you want exposure to this one on both sides, but I will lean with Ortiz.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's one of the rare cases where I almost say that there's almost not a bad pick on either side, just because I think we both know that it'll probably 90% go the distance. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, both guys have a high floor, and there's definitely grappling potential, so the upside's there as well. Let's move on to the main event of the preliminary card, Talis Latis taking on Sam Alvey. Smiling Sam. The odds opened pretty evenly, and they're sticking that way. Latis has moved slightly, the favorite now, minus 125. Alvey, the underdog, plus 105, and both are priced at 8.1K on DraftKings. I always like myself some value, but this is a close fight. Which way are you leaning?
Well, I'm definitely I live and die by Sam Alvey. I have for quite a while now. He's always up and down, but I'm definitely on Sam Alvey in this particular matchup. I do believe that he will prevent Tally Slady's takedowns. He's got an 85% takedown defense. He's able to he's always throwing. I'm not sure what the realistic upside is for Alvey. He doesn't do too much in volume, but I just think that he could outstrike ladies. He's going to outstrike ladies. So he's my preferred play. I know a lot of people are on ladies, but I also don't know about his gas tank. He was on the ground for a lot of his last fight too, Tally's. So it's a pretty fun fight, and at 8,100, you know, it's nice that you can get both sides in a tournament and not have to really worry about it. But I'm not sure what you think about it, Brett.
Yeah, it's a tough fight just because it could be high scoring, but it could be really low scoring. Like I don't think I've been on Sam Alvey in almost any of his fights. I like him as a person, but I don't like him as a fantasy guy, mostly because he's usually high owned. Everyone knows everyone associates him with knockouts, and he doesn't do much of anything. And so if he doesn't win by knockout, he won't score that well. Let me pull up his numbers from the last.
Yeah, I agree a lot with it, but I almost have a strong take that he's going to win the fight. So at 8,100 and you're going to get 25 plus the significant strikes. That's how I was looking at it.
Yeah.
He does have a win over our boy, Eric Spicely.
God, I don't want to talk about Eric Spicely ever again. Yeah, so Alvey in his last win, he beat Nate Marquardt, only landed 36 significant strikes in three rounds. That's a score of around 48 points total. In the fight before that, 63 significant strikes in three rounds. That's a score of about 60-ish, 65. If he doesn't win by knockout, he's not going to do anything for you. And I don't think Latis has ever been finished by strikes. So that's definitely a concern. I could see, you know, he hasn't looked great lately, so I could see Alvey winning by late TKO. But I'm going to have more exposure to Latis on this one because I think he has more potential to land takedowns. And he throws at a higher rate than Alvey. He may not be a better striker, but he throws at a higher rate and he has some power. So it's a really close fight. You can't argue with you either way, even if you want to fade this fight. I'll have a little bit of lateness and I'll probably fade Alvey like I do almost every time. Doesn't mean you can't win by KO, but
he's still smiling.
You got to plant your flag somewhere. And if Alvey goes out there and knocks Latus out with the one strike he lands per round, so be it.
Yeah, for sure. I see exactly what you're saying. You want to target the guy with the highest fantasy potential.
That I do. And hopefully Alvey doesn't screw me again. Let's move on to the main card. Where are we at? A fight I think everyone's going to want to target. Jake Ellenberger taking on Mike Perry. Perry comes in as a moderate favorite, minus 175. Ellenberger, the dog, at plus 155. On DraftKings, Perry is more expensive at 8.4K. Ellenberger, the underdog, 7.8K. I feel like Perry's going to be popular in this one. Are you on him as well?
Yeah, for sure. It's amazing because the general public hates him. General public doesn't like the guy. He's not a nice guy. But it doesn't matter. In the fantasy world, he's made some people a good chunk of money already. And people are really looking forward to seeing him throw hands with Jake Ellenberger, who's been knocked out by – who was it in his last
Masvidal.
Oh, and that was a sad stoppage too, because he got his
foot stuck. Yeah,
he got his toe stuck in the fence. It was a weird finish. I see a line value on Mike Perry in this one. I just don't see many paths of victory for Ellenberger besides probably taking him down. Really haven't seen Mike Perry's game, but it does look like he gets right back up. So I'm pretty strong on Mike Perry here. What do you think, Brett?
It's hard not to be. Ellenberger's been finished by strikes like 3 out of his last 7 fights. So, Perry hits really hard and he's aggressive. And I think as soon as he hurts Ellenberger, he's probably going to finish him. The one thing that no one like really talks about is, Perry's was essentially knocked out cold in one of his regional fights at the Bell. He came back and won that fight by KO. He was also knocked out cold in boxing. I don't know that he has a great chin. It's looked great in the UFC, but Ellenberger hits really hard. Ellenberger's inside distance props plus 250. That's one of the better underdog props on the card. I think Ellenberger's worth a shot in tournaments, but at the same time, Perry's definitely my preferred play. Plus 100 inside the distance, only 4.
You see the UFC do this often, where they'll put a guy that's they really want to push and get up, and then you'll see a guy that's kind of deteriorating, or they just see him on the way out. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm pretty sure Ellenberger was on his way out when he was fighting Matt Brown, and he was able to pull through. So the guy's got heart. He's got heart and will, and there's really no way to quantify that.
For sure. It's definitely a fight to target in tournaments, in my opinion. Someone's probably getting knocked out here. Let's move on to the next fight. Another Boston guy. We touched on it before. Joe Lauzon. Taking on Stevie Ray. Stevie Ray is pretty popular, I think. He comes in as a favorite at minus 200. Lowe's on the underdog at plus 170. Ray is 8.8K on DraftKings. Lauzon is 7.4K. I think Lauzon's a sneaky target in this one. You think so too?
Yeah, for sure. Whenever I saw it, 7.4. And what the rate that I see this fight playing out on the feet, and potentially going to the ground if Joe wants to take it there. It's interesting. Joe, Boston boy here, so a little bit biased. Brett knows this.
I love him too.
But it was interesting. So we've seen some tremendous upside with Stevie. He's pretty good at everything, but at the same time, we've seen so many people in the UFC be good at things, but then that's about it. We've seen Alan Patrick versus Stevie, and he was able to just blanket him. I think, wasn't it something like 5-6 significant strikes total for Stevie in that one? That's something very, very, very low. Joe's really focused on grappling. That's what he does. That's what he's got a gym up here in the Boston area. So I'm really hoping that he goes back to his roots here, tries to take him down, do exactly what Patrick did. Now, Joe's coming off of a win that he lost, and then in the fight before that, a loss that he won. It's a really, really interesting thing for his mental game, too, because you don't know what that's done to him. So I have a strong take that I, because of the Boston ties, but at the same time, I just see more paths of victory for Joe in this fight, whether it be potential submission or a, I don't know if, I'm definitely probably not going to be a knockout, but I do see a high tempoed fight here for some DFS purposes.
Yeah, I always like to target Lozon fights, really high pace, especially in the first round. Honestly, I see this as a striker versus grappler matchup. I think Ray is the better striker. Lozon's just going to come forward, and I think Ray's going to be able to counter him too effectively. And if Lozon can't get the fight to the ground, I think Ray's going to win, potentially win by knockout, but I don't know that that's likely. My biggest concern is that it was only two fights ago that, you know, Patrick took Ray down in every single round multiple times and controlled him. I don't know that that just goes away. And Lozon may not be the best wrestler in the world, but Patrick isn't the best wrestler in the world. Lozon fights at a much higher pace, and he's a better submission grappler. So with that said, we're targeting grappling, 7.4K on Lozon. You don't need much to get me on him, but seeing Ray get taken down several times recently means I'm going to be having a good amount of Lozon. Wouldn't be surprised at all if Ray beat him. Ray has looked good as well, especially on the feet. And I'll have some exposure to him in tournaments too, but Lozon's one of my favorite underdog plays.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I'm just pretty interested in seeing what exactly Stevie's ownership is, because he's got this hype, but I'm sure that people are going to look at Joe Lozon and say, man, that's a mispriced fighter right there.
I think they'll both be, you know, they'll both gain some ownership. There's just so many top price guys that are worth playing that have big names. I think they're all going to get some ownership.
Awesome. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the next fight. Another fighter I think will be popular, John Dodson, taking on Eddie Wineland. Dodson is a massive favorite at minus 440. Wineland, the dog, at plus 350. On DraftKings, Dodson's high priced, 9.4K. Wineland, the dog, 6.8K. Mike, are you paying up for Dodson?
Absolutely. He's got the speed advantage. We've seen Eddie be viciously knocked out before. I like Eddie. He's a warrior, but it's a pretty clear speed advantage, striking advantage. I could see this one ending, you know, for a second round. So I really do like John.
Yeah. I like him in theory. I just don't know if I want to pay for him. I like Holtzman more. I think Holtzman's going to be lower owned. So Dodson could go out there and win by KO. He's so fast. He's got power. I'm going to probably have heavier shares on, for sure going to have heavier shares on Holtzman. I also like Swanson up there. So I don't expect to have much ownership on Dodson just based on the price, but he's a massive favorite, good chance to win inside the distance. So I don't really see anything wrong with him.
And pretty before clear we, cut.
Yeah. Before we move off this fight, any interest in Wineland at all?
No, I just don't see anything that I can target in this one.
Yeah, I don't think Dodson is going to absorb any significant strikes. Not going to get finished.
Well, we were able to see Dodson take out Manny in pretty fast, and no one saw that fight happening that way. I mean, it was really fast, and so all over Dodson. But same thing that Brett said. It's a cluster of guys that you really want to get in.
Yeah, and unless you're just punting in cash games, I'm going to be off Wineland as well. Let's move on to the third fight from the top, a fight that I think, you know, people may want to go all in on. Ovin St. Preux taking on Marcos Rogério de Lima. The odds are close on this one. St. Preux -160, de Lima +140 on DraftKings. St. Preux is 8.7K and Lima 7.5K. You know, in five of Lima's six UFC fights, he hasn't made it past the 2:30 mark. So looks like there's a good chance for this one to finish. Are you going to be all in tournaments?
Oh, for sure. Both sides. But I do like that OSP is coming in at, you know, I think if he was not losing as much as he has been, he'd be just a huge favorite in this spot. He is fighting in his home town, I believe. Is that right,
yeah,
Brett?
I'm not sure.
He's from he's fighting out of Knoxville, Tennessee, and he went to UT.
That's right.
Our University of Tennessee. It's interesting because he's coming off of three losses, John Jones, Manuel, and Volkan Ozdemir, which no one saw that happening, which, I mean, it was interesting. It was a split decision. I think he did do enough to win that fight. Personally, I'm pretty heavy on OSP here. I think there's a lot of things going. He's going to be motivated to win at home. I know Rogério de Lima has some gas tank issues, so I just see more paths that way. But man, does this guy strike. That Jeremy Kimball fight was very interesting because Kimball fell down and he just, I mean, swarmed him super fast, throwing hammer fists that I've never seen before, super hard. So I mean, you run that card, you run that fight a couple times, and I bet you Kimball does take him down and is able to just withstand some of it. And I'd really like OSP in this spot. What do you think, Brett?
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about, oh, OSP's like falling off this and that, but to me, it's more about people overrated him when he was doing well. And now he's kind of evened out to his true skill level. He's not a title contender. He never has been. He was not, you know, the second best in the world when he fought John Jones. He's, you know, he's just not a top three type fighter, but that's okay. He's still decent. And so it's not like, oh, he was great, now he sucks. It's just like, you know, he's always been okay. And you know, he's fighting another okay fighter, a guy, probably the worst fighter he's fought in the UFC. You know, Dalim is a guy who will rush out there, try to knock you out in 10 seconds. And if he doesn't, he generally quits.
It's interesting. OSP has a 5-inch reach on this one. So a lot of guys that Rogério has been fighting, you know, he's just been able to get in there and throw hands. So I'm wondering if OSP can keep him at bay and also go in for a takedown when he wants to.
Yeah, what I see from Lima is that if he's winning, he's great. But as soon as he comes across like any, what's the word I'm looking for?
Adversity.
Yes, thank you. Adversity. He just he taps to non-existent submissions. Not non-existent. He just doesn't defend them. I think OSP can get him to the ground if Krylov got him to the ground. I forget who else. And Tigulov got him to the ground super easily. OSP can get him to the ground if he wants to. I don't know what his game plan is going to be, but I think if OSP gets Lima to the ground, he can finish him pretty easily. But regardless, this fight is super likely to end inside the distance at minus, where is it? Well, it's -150. To be under a round and a half, OSP -130 to finish inside the distance, Lima +160. So either Lima wins by knockout in the first couple minutes or OSP finishes him in the first two rounds. That's what I think. So I prefer OSP. I think he's the better fighter, but I will have heavy, heavy shares to this fight in tournaments.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting pricing on this one. That's that 8-7 is just enough to make me roster him, but you know, pivoting up to the safer guys is always the way to go.
Yeah, but in, you know, you can't ignore safety for upside. Like, this fight has the most upside on the entire card, arguably, as a whole. There are certainly safer guys. OSP could lose in 10 seconds, but at the same time, he's not super expensive. And if he wins, it's probably going to be by finish. He's probably going to score 100 points. He's probably going to end up on the winning lineup.
Oh, yeah. I 100% think that the winner of this one will probably be on the winning lineup.
Well, fingers crossed, it's not a snooze fest. I will be screaming on Twitter if that happens. Let's move on. The co-main event. Al Iaquinta comes back after a lot of time off. His last fight was April 4, 2015. He's taking on Diego Sanchez. Iaquinta, still massive favorite, minus 420. Sanchez plus 335. He's also super expensive at 9.2K. Sanchez 7K. Are you worried about the layoff for Iaquinta, or do you think this is still his fight?
No, it's still his fight. Right away when I saw the matchup, I said, man, this is going to be a fun one. And then, man, as this week's been going on and I've been digging in more and more, Iaquinta is pretty darn solid. And it's more about, the layoff is what's it going to do. But at the same time, man, if you watch the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, Diego is way off his rocker now. I mean, he's been hit in the head too many times.
It's sad.
We love him as a fighter. Like, this is the fight of the night, but maybe not for the best for Diego's side of things.
Yeah,
it was interesting because right away when I saw it, I said, man, I'm going to play Diego in some tournaments. And it's like, I really don't know, because we saw what Joe Lauzon was able to do with him. And Lauzon isn't known really for his striking.
And Iaquinta knocked out Lauzon pretty easily.
Yeah.
And he's also coming off a win over Jorge Masvidal. Regardless of what you think of the decision, he still fought him pretty well.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. Maybe if he knocks him out, he'll sell him some realty, because that's what he's doing on the side now.
Yeah, yeah. So for those who don't know, Iaquinta was a real estate agent over the last year and a half. Retired from fighting because he wasn't making enough money. Now he's like, screw it, whatever. I'm just going to fight for still not a lot of money. I know his knees aren't good. He's the better fighter. Diego's not going to be landing takedowns. I think Diego's an okay cash game punt. He might score 20 points, and he's relatively cheap. I don't love Iaquinta either. There's a lot of risk on him. I think he wins. Diego's a hard guy to finish. Probably won't be landing takedowns either. There's just other plays at the top I like more than Iaquinta, but it'll be a fun fight. There's a little bit of risk, and I'm not sure the upside's as high as other fights.
Yeah, Al doesn't have a big following, so it's going to be interesting if we get him at a low ownership, and he could just go out there and steamroll. We really don't know what the pace of the fight's going to be. But, I do see the merit there in Diego Sanchez as a punt in cash or something to free up some cash for up top for the big guys.
Sure. Yeah, low exposure fight for me. Let's move on to the main event. Best fight we've seen in years. Cub Swanson taking on the second coming of Conor McGregor, Artem Lobov. Swanson is a massive favorite, minus 750. Lobov plus 525. Swanson's also the most expensive on DraftKings, 9.8K. And Lobov is 6.4K. Mike, do you think Lobov has any chance here?
Simply put, no. But it's really interesting because we've seen this Conor McGregor style. You talk, you get fights. That's exactly what he's doing to his best friends with Conor. He trains with Conor. Lobov is really talked his way into this position, and Cub has all of the motivation in the world to just end it fast, try to just dominate him on wherever it goes. We saw Cub in a barn burner against the Korean Superboy, Duhoy Choi. That was hands down top three best fight I've ever watched. It was just hands flying everywhere. So we know that Cub's got a striking advantage here. I just wonder if Artem can hang on the ground when it comes to, McGregor and how much, he's got a lot of training, but I know Brett does like to see a little bit of Artem, so let's see what Brett has to say.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I totally forgot about that. I was like all in on Lobov. Not all in, but I had a lot of him against Chris Avila, one of his two UFC wins, and people were all on Avila, but Avila just wasn't a UFC level fighter.
He was also picking on a smaller guy. I mean,
He,
Avila was very small.
I mean, they literally pulled him off the regional circuit because he trained with the Diaz brothers. That's the only reason Avila was in the UFC, and so it made good for a good match, but Lobov was better. Lobov also looked good against Ishihara. I wasn't expecting him to look as good as he did, but he's still a lower level UFC fighter. It was only a couple fights ago he lost easily to Alex White. If you don't know who that is, I don't blame you. But White was able to take him down three times, outlanded him on the feet. Cub
Also,
Swanson's, yeah.
yeah. Oh, sorry to cut in. But yeah, Artem was also blanketed by Ryan Hall in the finale. I mean, he didn't do anything, and he gave up. So,
I don't take that as much into account because Hall, if he gets people on the ground, can blanket anyone. But the Alex White fight does concern me, and Swanson is by far the best guy he's ever fought. Swanson's coming off a great performance against Choi, better striker. He's really better everywhere. As long as he doesn't get caught and knocked out, Swanson should win this fight. I see no reason not to target him in cash games if you can afford him. He's a massive favorite. Even if the fight goes the distance, I think it's going to be a high-paced fight. There could be some takedowns there. Swanson could very, very easily score 110 plus points. I also don't hate Lobov for the price. I think he can last five rounds. He's pretty tough. Even if he doesn't, even if he scores 15 points or so, still frees you up a lot of cash and cash games. And I don't love him in tournaments, though. I really think Swanson's going to win. Sure, you can punt, but kind of as last week, I was saying, if it's 50 people or less, maybe you can punt with Lobov, but you really have to have six wins to win a tournament, and I just don't see him winning. I will also consider stacking this fight in cash games, and I'm going to ask you to be honest, Mike. Are you as into stacking in cash games as I am?
Absolutely not. I'm not a cash stacker,
How
Mom.
dare you?
I'm sorry, but it's just I've always wanted to have that, potential to get that six, those six guys the wins. It means more to me. And it's weird. It's always a card by card basis for me to figure it out. This for me is not, but I do see merit because Cub does have the upside there. I mean, he at the price can be the most highest scoring guy out there, and that's what you want from, the number one guy.
So if you want to make me happy, stack in cash games. If you want to make Mike happy, don't stack in cash games. Up to you. Before we get off the air, Mike, who do you think will be the highest owned guy on this card, or one of them, and who do you see as going kind of overlooked?
Gonna be interesting. I do think Dodson's probably going to be the highest, because it's going to be difficult for people to get Cub in there. Lower owned, I would say, let's quickly get somebody. Proctor, and I'm from Boston, so it's got that to it, but I do think he can last, and he's just gonna be durable. Go ahead, Brett.
For sure, yeah. I think Mike Perry is going to be really popular. I don't see many people below 8.1K being popular, but I'll go with Perry as popular, and Holtzman maybe as an overlooked guy. And with that, I think that about does it for this week, Mike. I want to thank you for coming on. Follow me on Twitter at Brett Apley, double T double P. Follow Mike on Twitter at H3Buddha. With that, thank you for watching, and we will see you guys in a couple weeks for UFC 211. Bye, everybody.